Jema. So, as we are seeing, in Indian stories, the Puranas especially, but also in the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, we see a constant and a beautiful mixing or intermixing of the natural, the occult, the supernatural, the spiritual. Because these people had the psychic vision to see life in its totality. Behind every outer event, there is a whole phenomena going in the background. And they could beautifully blend and mix just as in life. But now we have lost the vision and we have a tendency to call them mythology. Now I'm not going into whether mythology is a term and what it means, but the point is that these are not unreal things, they are deep, profound things. And because we have lost the vision, we don't understand. And so we have a tendency to label whatever we don't understand is untrue. So for example, not maybe about 10-12 years back, someone while writing Shurbindo's biography speaks of hagiography, that in India there is a tendency to do hagiography. By hagiography is in Hindi Mahima Mandan, that we start using flowery languages to describe any great figure and we almost not only idolize him but divinize him. But it's because the person who wrote also mother's biography, not being sympathetic to Indian sensibilities, or rather being blind to Indian sensibilities, and I must say even most modern Indians are blind to it. They don't have the psychic vision. It's a blindness, that's all. So when you are blind, you don't see that whole thing inside which is there. And repeatedly the Bhagavad speaks of Sri Krishna and the blind humanity which is unable to recognize him. At the same time, when it describes Sri Krishna through the different characters in the great Purana poem, so you can see that they are not just seeing the physical form, but something much more. It's a seeing, it's a seer vision. It's not hagiography, it's not just for the sake of writing somebody's writing. And that's how he tries to complete the figure of Sri Krishna through various different characters. And many of the stories are very, very, very clearly symbolic, which are so straight and direct to anyone who is a practitioner of yoga. And the person who is not will not connect with them. He will think, oh, these are fantastic stories, and we'll start with one such story. So, but before that, some historical context, because as we know, it is history also. So, about 36 years have passed since the war. During the war, Sri Krishna is around 90 years of age. Mahabharata war. Arjun is well in his 80s. Some estimates will say 72, 75, but by and large, he was not much younger to Sri Krishna. So Arjun is around in his 80s. Sri Krishna is 90. Just think of the vitality of that age. And all over, 1,000 years or 2,000 years after the Mahabharata war, you see the Trojan war. Again, the vital heroic age. That's how it is called, the vital heroic age. And so 36 years after the war, Sri Krishna leaves his body at 125 years. Pandavas are well past 100. Even the youngest would have passed 100. Exact age is difficult to say, but all of them had lived a full life. And that's when Arjun returns from Dwarka with the news, most tragic news, that, you know, Sri Krishna is no more. Now, you know, Vyas Rishi describes what happens when divine departs. And I'll at some point draw a comparison between what happened post Sri Krishna and what happened post Sri Aurobindo. So when divine is there, there is a great degree of stability. During that time, the worst is there. So you see, during like Sri Aurobindo's time, we know Hitler. There can never be any asura, I can say, compared to Hitler. You can combine Ravan, Kans and whatever else, Duryodhan, they look very decent, saintly characters. And we see that Sri Aurobindo had put his entire force against Hitler. We see on the other hand imperialism. Many of these asuras were rampant on earth. So similarly, during Shri Krishna's time, there is a all the asuric egos, tremendous asuric egos, and all of them are laid to rest. But then there would always be events, things happening, like we see now events and things happening. Immediately in the wake of Shri Krishna's departure and also subsequently. So immediately after Shri Krishna's physical withdrawal or during that period, Arjun goes and he has a message from Shri Krishna, left by Shri Krishna. He's not there when Shri Krishna is departed. And we'll come to his story and the backdrop later. That's when properly Shri Krishna Leela begins. But the message is that Shri Krishna had, Dwarka has been relocated and actually it is being drowned, and Shri Krishna has to take all the Ranis, that is 16,000 Ranis, in his sanrakshan and take them to Hastinapur. This is not a message from Shri Krishna, but this is a message which is sent to him by Satki, some of those few people who survived the Yadava clan's destruction. So Krishna rushes, and there is a very painful description that the robbers have come and they are stealing away all the, not just the queens, but the jewels and everything. Everything there, because there are no Yadavas left to defend, and Shri Krishna has departed, Balram has departed. So Arjun is furious and he lifts his Gandiv, but he is unable to lift and put the string on the bow. It's a very painful incident. And then he realizes that without Krishna I am nothing. Though of course we understand he is in his 100, but still he is Arjun is Arjun. He is unable to string the bow. He is unable to do anything. So desperately he runs after the robbers, holding the Gandiv and using it like a lathi. And he tries to beat them, but they simply outsmart him and they are on their heels. They run away. So Arjun is heartbroken with all this event. And he comes back broken. So Vyas describes what is his state. And he describes what Krishna meant to him. Actually, if you read, you'll begin to cry that, what the divine means. We can only think about, people, some of the experiences we know of people who were here after Sri Aurobindo's physical withdrawal. But the mother took care. Otherwise, what it would mean. So he rushes back and Yudhishthir asks him, tell me, how is everything? Everything is okay. So he does not know what to speak. He's crying and crying. And, he says, what can I tell you? I don't have words. Well, Krishna has departed. Yadav clan is destroyed and all this, he says. Obviously, Pandavas are in for, a heartbreak. And then they realize that without Krishna, our mission has no meaning. Our existence has no meaning. So they must withdraw. So they hand over the throne to Parikshit. So Parikshit rules for another 24 years. He doesn't live a long life. He's around 60, but that's a different story. We'll come to King Parikshit in a while. And then there is the story which is narrated not in the Bhagavat. In the Bhagavat it is only mentioned. But it's narrated in the Mahabharata, in the Mahaprasthan Parv, the 17th book, as the Pandavas' ascension to heaven. Now this story is a very clearly symbol of a yogic story. And very beautiful if we get into its sublime context, how a yogi departs. So all these Pandavas, they are not ordinary beings. They have lived like a real thorough karma yogis, jivan mukt in their own right. And so they decide that now the time has come for us to depart and we must make the great ascension. So of course physically they withdraw to Himalayas. All the mountains seen in dream always indicate ascension of the physical consciousness. That's how Sri Aurobindo has confirmed this. So if you see that you are climbing a mountain, it means not just an ascension of consciousness, but it's an ascension of the physical consciousness. So they, because their body has had such impressions, so what do yogis do? They know that if we leave the body here, of course that's one advantage to the earth, that the impressions are left back on earth. But they want to take as much as possible of the experiences in the body and depart. So obviously they sit in meditation. Now this is my version. I have not heard or read anywhere. According to the story, they start, okay, let's first take the story. They start climbing the mountain And one by one they fall. So first Draupadi falls. And if you read the story, it's very clear it's a yogic story. So when Draupadi falls, ordinarily, in a person with ordinary sensibilities, we'll wait, no? We'll say at least we'll do a Daha Sanskar. But if you see the story, the hint is there. So when Draupadi falls, all that is told to us why she fell. Why she is the first one to fell, and that's because she was partial to Arjun. This is contradicted by one of the very famous dialogues of the dead written by Shurbindu, that, you know, she was faithful only to Krishna. So, but that's a different thing. Let's come to Vyas' story. So when Draupadi falls, they don't look back. They keep moving. Now this is unusual. This is clearly symbolic. It's not, they are not describing a physical event. Physical event, they would stop, at least give a Daha Sanskar. But she drops. And then further up, now you see, they are all dropping in the sequence. The youngest, which is again unusual, Sahadev departs, falls. Then Nakul falls. You can't have such a mathematical calculation. Then Arjun departs, then Bhima departs, and then Yudhishthir is left alone. At no point of time they look back or do any cremation or anything for those who are left behind. It's like almost like cruel, heartless beings they are moving, which is not true, obviously. Certainly not for Yudhishthir, who is caring even for the dog. And somehow there is a dog who is accompanying. It's a symbolic story, but first the story. So when he reaches a point where physically he can enter into heaven. So the guardians of the heaven say, sir, you have done very well. Come first in the race. Please enter through the main door. Heaven welcomes you physically. And so Yudhishthir wants to take the dog and go inside. And they are told, no, it's on, you know, dogs are not allowed. And remember who wrote dogs and Indians are not allowed? See, it's very interesting. Dog represents faithfulness, it's dharma. You don't leave ever. So Yudhishthir says, then I refuse heaven. I'll not give up the dog. This is my dharma. I've taken it on myself. He has been faithful to me. It's my duty to be faithful to this dog. So then they say the dog changes into dharma himself. He is dharma, none else but dharma, because Yudhishthir is the son of Dharmaraj. So you see the symbols are very clear, and he says, no sir, I'm like, basically we were trying to test you and you have passed with flying colors. Please come in. And then he says that, you know, you had told half a lie. You remember? He says, yes. So you have about a few minutes in hell and then you can go to heaven and dwell there forever, for a long, long time. So Yudhishthir says, where are my family? Draupadi has gone, everybody has gone. He said, they are in hell. And then it's recounted that Draupadi did this and Sahadeva was very proud of it, very egoistic. Sahadeva was very spiritually developed but very egoistic. He had the capacity to see things in the future. So obviously spiritual ego is the worst ego. So he's the ego. And then it is Nakul. So Nakul is very handsome. You know, they are both Ashwin Kumars. And then comes Arjun. So Arjun is Agni. Literally he is that. And then comes Vayu, which is Bhima. And then comes Yudhishthir. Now you see the five elements and nature. So first thing to drop away is nature. But let the story be a little more over. So he says, then I want to be in hell where all these elements are there. So he goes to hell and there they are all crying. And then the Yama's guardians, they say, sir, please, your time is over. So he says, no, my presence is comforting them. I won't go from here. Then the scene changes. Again, they show that none of this was true. So in the book itself, it is mentioned that this was not some sin for which they were being punished. It was an illusion created. There was nothing like, because Draupadi did this, therefore she was in hell. None of this. In fact, the story literally says then the illusion is removed. And they see that all their brothers and Draupadi are in heaven. And he is told, this was the last test for you. And then as they all are in heaven together, In fact, he is told first that, you know, Karna has gone to heaven and your relatives are in hell. But that's a minor detail. We need not get into it. So, when the time comes, we'll talk about it. What is hell and heaven? Then Shri Krishna comes, blesses them and says, all of you need not stay in heaven. I am taking you to my dham. So they get moksha. That's how it is described. Because they have, after all this, they don't need to. Now we come to the story. What is the story actually? So Draupadi is the nature which has bound them all together. All the five elements are bound together. Sahadev, the youngest, the ego self. And then we see that all the elements, Nakul and Sahadev, represents the immediate binding elements, which is Prithvi and Jal. And then there is the Arjun, which is the fiery warrior of the hero. And then the one who upholds the divine will. If you look at Arjun, he is the one who has executed the divine will. By no means I am suggesting that Mahabharata is an allegory. No, it's a real event. But there are many beautiful allegorical aspects woven into it. Just like Shobhindra is done with Savitri. Where he says this is an allegory, this is symbol as well as a real story and the characters also exist. So we have to understand on all these planes together. Human mind does either or. So Arjun is that fire which is the upholder of the divine will. That's why he is the one who, Nar Narayan, they are always together. And then Bhim is Vayuputra. So we see now last element which will merge is Akash Tattva. So Yudhishthir goes right up to there. And what is it that carries us together? We are told karma, but according to Mahabharata, it is the dharma. And there is a very subtle difference. Karma is what we are doing, actions, energy which has gone into creation. And dharma is that which holds you. What is it that was your core, the center, which held you all through your journey, which you held to? There is a very subtle difference. So karma is like a mechanical something. Normally it's understood that what outwardly we are doing things which are good. But as the Gita itself sees, what is more important is what is your inner state. Are you united with the divine? That's how he says, Shri Krishna, that I'll deliver you from all sin and evil. Do not grieve. Man mana bhav mad bhakta madhyaji manamaskuru. So that's the subtle difference. And that's the dharma which we see. Dog is a symbol of faithfulness. So when you are steadfast, faithful to the truth that you stand for, which is what Yudhishthira is about. Now, what is this physical ascension? So this has been an effort since the time of, if you read the epic of Gilgamesh and you know, many epics where there has been an effort at physical immortality. There has been the Asuric way and there has been the subtle ways. Shobhindo takes it to its ultimate possibility. So now physical body you can't literally, it's not about transformation of the physical body. But in the time of the Vedas, the immortality, possibility of immortality of the physical consciousness is there. Physical consciousness can, you know, arrive at immortality, and that's precisely what the Pandavas are attempting, or that, you know, the whole thing is shown that how far you can go. Now there is another interesting symbol of the story. Where do they ascend? If you read the text, it is Sumeru Parvat. There is no actual mountain is Sumeru, though people often have a tendency to put a peak. But Sumeru Parvat is sacred in Hinduism, in Buddhism and Jainism. And Meru is invariably the spine. Sumeru. So the consciousness is ascending through the spine to higher and higher realms. So very clearly it's a symbol where different levels, and finally through the Sumeru Parvat they reach, the physical consciousness is able to reach the heavens. That's not transformation. Heavens is still a mid-world. You can take the entire physical consciousness and go up to the heavens of the vital world, which is where warriors go, which is wonderful. But Shri Krishna comes and takes them still further into moksha. There they have to discard this. Now, has this got any correspondence in, you know, other yogas? Yes, you will see that Kabir and Guru Nanak, it's an identical story. I don't know whom does it fit, but both identical story is narrated. So there both bodies disappeared. It is said that if a person can remain in samadhi for Some would say 21 days, some would say 42 days. Then your physical body will disappear because it is withdrawn into the pure existence. So there are yogic ways which have been known. And here in Sri Aurobindo's own yoga, we see Pavitrada doing this feat, but something still further. He didn't stop at any heaven. He took the entire physical consciousness right from the cells and put it in the mother. So what happens to the gross body? Gross body remains on earth. Gross body remains. But right up to the subtle physical, the physical consciousness is taken up. So Pavitrada did that. And mother speaks of him that I never imagined that he will be able to do it. Even she found it very, like, how could he do it? He was just about 69 or something. And he did that whole night. He was extracting the body. It's a similar process which is being described by Vyas Rishi about the ascension of the Pandavas and the possibility of ultimately physically, by physically is meant the consciousness, right, which is engaged in the physical, extracting it out of the last bit of snare of ignorance and taking it right up to the possibility of, you know, Swarga, or Swarga was actually Swarlok, which is the realm of the, actually the mental world created by the rays of the supramental. That's what Swarlok, in vital it is called as Swargalok. So we need not, you know, that's not important. So that's the ascension of the Pandava story, which is very interesting, very symbolic, very clear. If we read through the Sumeru, as I said, Draupadi, then step by step, they are not turning back. This used to strike me as a child, that how can he do that? How? Okay, she died on the way because she had done something. But Pandavas don't look back. You cannot look back. Your elements, it's also a kind of description of what happens in during death, which is described in several places in Bhagavad Puran. So you drop away the physical nature which was holding, then you drop away the ego self, then you drop away these different elements. You don't turn back and say, where is my body, where is this? A yogi doesn't do that, he departs. So this is the whole process through which they depart, all the symbols together. Now Parikshit is there, and now comes the interesting part of the story. Sri Krishna, by his presence, had held back all the different forces at bay. You see, physical presence means what? The moment mother had physically withdrawn, Auroville started boiling. What happened during that time is a story to be read. Terrible fights, quarrels. If you read the history of what was happening in India, you see, 80s, all this started. Khomeini today, you know, we are just 50 years here turning, it's turning circles. And around the same time, you see, Kashmir problem came up. 80s, again 80s, late 80s. So, because they had kept, their physical presence keeps these things away. And suddenly, you know, all this starts rushing in to occupy a place. So Kali entry is that physical presence of the divine keeps away many things because they are scared, these forces. But as soon as he depart, they try to gain entrance. And they are allowed. That's a different thing. We'll come to that later. Why they are allowed. That comes in Janmejaya Sarpi Yagya. They are allowed. So that's when we see Kali making an entry. One day King Parikshit is going. And he's again very dharmanishth king. As we know that he is in a way child of Sri Krishna, because he has saved him in the womb. And right in the womb, he had the darshan of Sri Krishna. A very interesting story about King Parikshit. So when he was in the womb, he saw this being with miniature being with four arms protecting him. So Parikshit, from the time of his birth, remembered this, that there is a being which I saw. And all his life, he was meeting people to find who was he whom he saw. Very fascinating. He was like a yogi from birth. No wonder he left at, you know, relative young age at 60. But he was searching for who was he whom I have seen. Because he saw the being with four arms and trying to recognize the face, facial recognition. But he is unable to, you know, find it. He hears the stories of all the great stories. But he wants to meet that specific being. So he is himself both dharmanishth. He is himself a yogi. He is a Raj Rishi. That's how he is described. Like all the Pandavas and these kings. So when he is going one day on a, you know, in the forest, and he sees that there is a cow. with a bull. Now see, the story is very clear. Bull is with a one leg. He's standing with one leg. And there's a man who is dressed up as a king, but is of a very lowly nature. So he is the man who is very cruelly and mercilessly beating the bull and the cow, and you know, they are urinating and it's a very miserable state. So there is a little dialogue before Parikshit sees them. It's the cow who meets the bull and they have a conversation. So who is cow? Cow is Mother Earth. Now you see why cow has been sacred, why cow was like a bhakti. Whatever gives you plenty, Kamadhenu, the cow of plenty. So physical cow becomes sacred because she gives plenty. She gives you, you know, she is a substitute for the mother's milk. It is known that till today that if there is a substitute for mother's milk, it is the cow's milk. Mother's milk is best, but next to that comes closer. Then her urine, we may or may not believe in it, but people use it for therapy. There are people, at least Morarji, our ex-prime minister, lived for nearly 100 years. And anyways, people may laugh over it, but there is a logic to how cow urine helps homeopathically, but I am not going into it. I have not tried it either, so let me put it there. Cows, even cow dung is used, both for gas and for, you know, igniting. So cow is one which is considered as sacred because she gives plenty. And what does she ask? In return, she asks only grass. So she is regarded as also symbol of Mother Earth. So she is Mother Earth, and she is saying, she is looking very sad. So the bull asks, why are you so sad? I think it is because Sri Krishna has departed. Now you see, there is a perspective. She says, yes, what can I do? When he was here, it was so wonderful. The leelas he did, she recounts, and says, you know, I was feeling so much full of burdened, so burdened. And he came and relieved me of all this burden. But now there is another burden which is left over me, his departure. And see, that's how the mother describes that the biggest tragedy for earth is when the divine departs. And because he comes primarily to transform physical matter, so now all these stories will fall in line. So she says, you know, I had such a wonderful time. Everything was so beautiful. He was taking care of everything. I didn't have to worry at all. See, and then says, once he has departed, I miss him so much. And, you know, she is full of tears. She is very unhappy. Simply because Krishna has withdrawn. She knows. And she says, see, now this kind of fellow has come. Because that man who is beating, he has also come. Then just then, King Parikshit comes on the scene. And he says, what is this? Who is this? Who are you? Who is this fellow? Cruel man in my kingdom. He dare not do this. And then the cow says that, you know, the bull, he says, who has done this? Because he's standing on one leg. He says, how come? Who has tortured you? So the bull describes a very interesting conversation. The bull, who has done this to you? So bull says, you know, obviously bull is speaking, please. It's clearly symbol and there is no mythology in it. There is a profound truth in it. So the bull says, you know, regarding what happens to you in your life, there are different ways people put it across. Some say it is because of your karma. Some say it is, you know, because of fate, bhagya. Some say it is the doings of the Lord, the leela of the Lord. I don't know. You can decide what it is due to. So when Parikshit hears, he says, this cannot be uttered by any ordinary person. Even though you have suffered, you are not blaming anyone for this condition. That's the thing. The bull doesn't say, you know what, this fellow has done this to me. You're not complaining. You can only be dharma. Because it's only dharma which teaches you to look within and search the causes inside of the problem that you are experiencing. This is the sign of dharma. Those who don't live by dharma blame something outside, complain others. Because they are living by a dharma. So all the time it is somebody outside you. Those who live by dharma, they look within. So he says, you have looked within and you have searched for the cause within. You have not blamed anybody for your condition. You are dharma. And the bull says, yes, of course. So what about your legs? He says, when Shri Krishna was there, I had these four legs. Now you see the legs of dharma, limbs of dharma. He says, my leg was tapasya, pavitrita, purity. So tapasya, ascesis, purity, kindness, love, compassion. And the fourth leg is satyam, truth. So tapasya is that concentrated, human beings were concentrating their energy in uplifting endeavors. Because Sri Krishna was there, so automatically dharma was there. All that was happening was lifted up as if automatically towards the divine. That's how mother also says in one of the prayers. And then kindness, love, we know Sri Krishna embodies that, compassion. So this is the second limb. And the third is of course purity. And fourth is satyam. Now the three legs are gone. Only on truth I am standing. But this fellow wants to cut it. See, Kali Yuga is falsehood. So he says, this person wants to remove. So first Parikshit restores the legs of dharma. That is a bull. And then he says, you fellow, you are masquerading as a king. See, every detail is so beautiful. So Prithvi says that, well, these are the kind of people who are going to come. What will be my state when people who are of very low quality, they will become kings? So Parikshit says, no place in my kingdom, you be out. And he wants to kill, drive Kali out, rather kill him. And Kali plays that ultimate game. He takes Sharanagati of Parikshit. He says, I surrender myself to you. So now he says, I am Arjuna's grandson. Once you have surrendered, I cannot harm you. Remember mother's story? Falsehood says, I accept that I will be defeated. But till then, I will do whatever I have to do. Exactly the same thing happens. He says, all right. So he says, but you go to some other kingdom. He says, where will I go? Wherever I go, I see you coming with your bow and arrow. I'm afraid of you. So where will I go? So he says, okay, you go to four places. First he gives him four places. So we can understand the story, very clear symbol. One, you go to Las Vegas. I mean, gambler's den, wherever gambling is going on. Second is you go to a tavern, wherever people drink and, you know. So there you go. Third is where people are doing vaishya, vritti, paristri. They are, you know, they are indulging in lust, lustful activity. There you go. Not with this thing, but which are obviously like prostitution, places like that. And the fourth is, he says that these are the three places he tells him to go. And the fourth is, fourth is wherever people are indulging in lying. There you go. So he says, okay, I'll go there, these places. He says, one more place you give me. So he says, okay, you live wherever there is gold. So he enters in the crown of King Parikshit. Now you see, it is so interesting. And when you see the cycle turning, the return of gold back from, you know, at one point gold was regarded as a currency. All money world, mother spoke of the three places where there is the strongest influence of falsehood. She spoke of the kings, which is not king. She didn't use the word kings, but ministerial heads, government heads. She says the most difficult people to change because they are fully under the influence of falsehood. So that's how she speaks of this asura as the lord of nations. And you see, that's how he came, masquerading as king. Then the second place, he says, wherever there is money, financial world, falsehood. So here also he's told that wherever there is, of course, gambling and all that, there you go. Wherever there is gold, there you go. Wherever there is the people who are lying and slandering, there you go. And finally, mother says that wherever there is this kind of a lustful activity where, you know, various forms of lust, not just about sexual act with a woman, but many such things. So there you can go. She says these are the three strongholds of the asura, and it's there in the Bhagavad very clearly. It's some variation here and there is a different thing. Now she is not referring to love. She is referring to a pure, an act which is simply a animal act, like what, or rakshasic act or asuric act. That's what she is. They are referring to, not about the normal things which happen in life. So then he says, okay, he sits with King Parikshit's crown. He doesn't realize he has unwittingly given a place to him. And then his buddhi, Parikshit, for a momentary moment, there is a lapse in his thinking. So Parikshit is going another day. He is very tired, very thirsty, and he loses his way, and he enters into a Rishi's hermitage, where there is a Rishi called Shamik Muni. He is meditating and he's very hungry and thirsty. So he says, give me some water, give me some water. And this Muni just ignores him. Ignores means he's in his trance. So he gets very angry. He says all kinds of words to him and picks up a dead snake and says, you are like this dead snake, puts him around his neck to see if he wakes up, whether he is just doing masquerading as if he is in trance, trying to fool everybody. But he doesn't get up even with the snake. Now he realizes that possibly he has done a mistake. And he starts going away from there. He realizes that this is a genuine sage. But he can't do anything much, so he wants to run away, goes away from there. Meanwhile, Shamik Muni's son, Sringi, he is also a very tejasvi boy. He comes to know that, you know, this has happened to my dad. And he is furious. He picks up the water of river Kaushiki. See, why water? Why did people pick up the water and take a vow? Now, water is something which is the flowing life energy, just like the wind. But beauty is that water flows with the ground. Wind scatters. So it was a very clear symbol that they took in the water. So it's like now, that water is thrown to the ground with this charge, with this strong curse, that whoever did it will die of the same snake 1 week from now. So then Shamik Muni comes out of his trance, and then he sees his son, and his son is very angry, and he narrates the whole story. Then he realizes, he says, you shouldn't have done it. First of all, Parikshit is a genuine king. This happens. This may happen to anyone. Sign of a great rishi. He's a master. He says, now that you have said this will come true, but I can only pray to the Lord to forgive you, because this was not something you should have done. You have done it, but anyways, nothing can be done now. But just let this message go to the king that this is the curse you have laid. So the message goes to the king Parikshit that this is what has happened. Now see the response. Very interesting. What kind of ideals Vyas sets for all of us? Standards. Forgiveness of the Muni. He knows that, you know, he didn't want to insult him. This happened. The power of a Brahmin's words. Rishi's words. Actually, Rishis had nothing with them. But they had the power of the word. Which was the most powerful thing. Rishis didn't need to pick up Dhanush Baan and fight like the Kshatriyas. They could inspire armies, or by their word they could destroy an empire, or by their word or blessing they could rebuild an empire. This was the power they carried with themselves. And there are plenty of instances we'll come across. Why? Because they had done the tapasya of speech, which Sri Krishna mentions in the Gita, which the mother speaks about in the four austerities. One of them is austerity of speech. Never, if you don't harbor any ill will towards anyone in your heart, when you don't indulge in gossiping, slander, using foul language, ill will, etc., projecting these things through the mouth, when you know how to, where to restrain and where to speak, then it's a tapasya of speech. And that speech carries power. Those who have done this tapasya, their speech is their weapon. Of course, not supposed to be used like that. So then, when Parikshit came to know, he says, I think this is the right thing that has happened, because I have become very indulgent. I have done a mistake. Look at the kings. So he says, whatever it be, I did something which I shouldn't have done. I lost my cool for a few moments, and that's not how a king should be. Not one who is coming from this dynasty. You know, they're this sense of dynasty. And then he says, I should use this time to now see how best I can use this time. So he puts his son Janmejaya as the king. And very interesting, as an aside, Parikshit's wife is Iravati. And you know, whose daughter is she? Parikshit is son of Uttara. Okay? And Iravati is daughter of Uttar. It's a cousin's marriage. So you see, many of the things which today we look at is very different from how the ancients lived and looked at. So we have to understand that they had their own yardstick, their own standards. So anyways, so he says that, well, I'll spend these last 7 days in the best way possible. So he goes to a Tirth Kshetra, gives the kingdom to Janmejaya, and he goes and asks a question from, just then Shukadev comes, and he has gone to a place where a lot of rishis have by chance accumulated Prabhashchit. That's where all of them used to go. So he says, I want to know, I have 7 days to live. What should I do now? Put in modern context. Have you got all your tests done? Are you insured? And hospital? And ventilator? We never thought like that. That's what I keep saying. That, well, this idea never came to the Indian mind. That science should develop along this line of prolonging life in the body. This way. Why it is there in Western science? Because there is no idea of rebirth. So one life is the end. So you do whatever you have to do. In India, we believe in cycle of birth and death, rebirth. So death is never a cause of fear or grief. Of course, people are attached to those who are left behind, they grieve. But it didn't carry that kind of connotation. That's how the Kshatriya warriors could go and battle. Youngsters could go and battle. That's how they had that capacity. But death, Shobindu in one of his writings says, this is one religion, Sanatana Dharma, which has taken away from a human being the fear of death entirely. That's a different thing that we don't follow and we are as afraid. Those who claim to be followers of Sanatana Dharma, even devotees of all kinds. But sign of it, and that's why a psychic being is afraid of nothing. And this fear is one of the biggest falsehoods. So there is no fear of death. So King Parikshit goes and says that, well, I have a week to live. What should I do? So Shukadev doesn't tell him any of these things. See, description is so interesting. When Shukadev is coming, he describes. He has got such a, you know, radiating. He is accompanied by people. He is accompanied by women. Now, of all the people, why is the Rishi mentioning? Because Shukadev has mastered himself. He is shown as having mastered right from the beginning. And so he comes and he says, well, as you know very well, now this is the time. There are different methods people have described during this phase to, how to prepare yourself for departing. But if you ask me, the best way is to spend your time thinking of Sri Krishna, basically the divine and his, and, you know, he uses three things. He says, bhajan, that is remembrance of the Lord. Kirtan. Kirtan is about his gungan. Kirtan is not just doing dal kartal. Many people think it's the way Sufis dance, that's a method. You may or may not do it. But kirtan is about dwelling upon his exploits. See what Sri Aurobindo has gifted us, Savitri. So, because it's about the life of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. So when you are spending time in the atmosphere of the Lord's life, gunagan, kirtan, and then he says, bhajan, kirtan, smaran. So you remember the Lord. Bhajan is taking joy in the Lord. So he says, you spend your time like that. And for that, I will tell you the most beautiful story, which is of the Bhagavat, the story of Sri Krishna himself. So we see that different context come. Bhagavat is recounted to King Parikshit by people who have gathered there. Sonak and Sutji are talking about it, that you know how this was first recounted to King Parikshit. So we should keep putting in context. And then there is a description of he says, how should I meditate on the Lord? I have not seen. How should I meditate on the Lord? So he says, there are different ways you can meditate on the Lord. Because he is told that you think about the Lord, you smaran karo, remember him. How do I remember him? Of course, he can remember by the name. He says, first you should meditate upon the gross body of the Lord. It's very amazing. He says, what is the gross body of the Lord? Then he describes this whole material universe is the gross body of the Lord. Exactly, Shobhindas used exactly this word, Virat. This is the gross body of the Lord. So it describes the gross body of the Lord, this universe, the directions, and you know what the ears are, what the limbs are, what the legs are. And he says the entire universe dwells in this gross body. And again and again, because you know we speak of, when we talk of Kundalini, we only speak of ascension from the Muladhar to going above. Mother has spoken that there are centers below the Muladhar. And she speaks about the subconscious, the inconscious. That is exactly what he describes, that below the waist, there are the seven hells or the seven patals. So the closest is in the Janga, Sutal, which is still okay. Then you have different kinds of patal, Dharatal, Rasatal, and all different names. And then above the Muladhar, you have the seven higher worlds, which go right from the vital, mental, and ultimately spiritual. And that's some other time we'll talk about it. So he says, in the body of the Lord, all of them are there, including the Rasatal. If you read it, it sounds very strange. Why is he holding in himself the Rasatal? He should shake it off, no? Throw it off. He can have a body where feet are all luminous. Why is in the outer body? Because this is not in the Sukshma body that he describes later. Why is in the gross body even Rasatal and all this? That's why there is the drama of hell enacted here. If you read this portion in the Bhagavat, you will understand Sri Aurobindo's Savitri, Book 2, Canto 1 very well. Everything is there in the right proportion. This can only be understood if you bring in the evolutionary dimension. Things start from the inconscient and climb up to there. Which again he brings. He says that, you know, he has his, if you look at this Virat Purush, he has his forehead is the Brahmin. Forehead and the mouth is the Brahmin. That's why you see Brahmin's speech. And then the chest and the bhuja, the arms, they are the Kshatriya. And the abdomen and the thighs, they are the Vaishya. And the feet are the Shudra. All are one in the Lord. It's not like he has cut off anybody. So basically, the work of the Shudra was service. Now in the new creation, all of them has to come together in the new being. But that will be probably jumping few steps. So man's journey starts from the physical consciousness. That's how it starts, the Shudra Tattva. Then it goes into a larger sense. It's not just where your immediate, it's like you're attached to your little village, your little life. So that's how the Shudra Tattva is. It's connected only with the physical things, your relatives, born by birth, common language. That's the Shudra Bhav. Then what is a Vaishya? He ventures. That's how he goes somewhere, takes things, brings back things. So he circulates energies into the world. And then there is the Kshatriya. It's an evolutionary process. Sri Aurobindo describes it several places. But in a very impersonal way in Savitri, Book 1, Canto 5. This is the sailor on the flow of time. We have spoken about all this in Savitri Yagya. And then the consciousness climbs into the Kshatriyatva. Kshatriya Tattva is important. Now you are not just circulating the energy. Now you are have the spirit of the conqueror. That's why life brings its difficult phases. Otherwise, the Kshatriya cannot wake up. Kshatriya Tej has to wake up before you go further. So some of these sages were Kshatriyas. Kshatriya means, in fact, there was a knowledge which was given only to the Kshatriya, not even to the Brahmin. Because he had grappled with the world and its processes, not accepted defeat. He had wrestled with the world forces, even conquered them. So there is an outer conquest, there is an inner conquest. So Kshatriya is about conquering the different dimensions. So all these stories are there. And then there is the Brahmanatat, where after you have grappled with the world forces, wrestled with the energies, God is not here to make things easy for us. If he is making things easy for us, that means he has not yet taken us seriously. And if life is difficult, I was talking the other day, and I said, see, some people, the moment they come to the ashram, life becomes very difficult for them. So she says, other person was saying, yeah, and see, as soon as the person has come, this has happened. I said, yeah, specially chosen. Yeah, it's like that, because you have now come into that category. So when you grapple, wrestle and qualify, then you are ready for the greater battles of the inner life. Otherwise, you are not ready for that inner battle, which is where the spiritual ascension really begins. So all this is still a training ground. So that's how it is described. And then he gives a small little mention, after which we'll stop. He says, you know, this is just what you should do. Meditate upon the Lord and leave your body, and 7 days are too much. This is too much. Only 7 days, sir? No. He says, I'll tell you about a Rishi for whom one muhurt was enough. Now, one muhurt is 24 minutes or 12 minutes. So it's not one moment. And he passingly mentions the story of Khatwang Rishi. Some people connect him to Khatu Shyamji. I don't think it is really, there is a connection. Khatu Shyamji's story is different, but they say that area is belong to Khatwang Rishi. So Khatwang Rishi's story is that he participated in the Devasur Sangram. Now you see Muchkund Rishi, they are all human kings, but they are kings who became Raj Rishis who participated in the Devasur Sangram. How? Very simply, there is a constant battle upon earth between forces of light, in modern language, positivity, forces which give hope, love, compassion, joy, peace, harmony, they build this. And the forces of chaos, disorder, disintegration, negativity, doubt, failure, fear, worst. And they are all who lure you, lust, anger, all these are the negative forces, which is the asura. So they have a reality in their own world, subtle world, but they influence human beings, but they want to conquer this earth. So any person, especially a person who is a leader of men, when he has positivity, like kings for example, and leader of men, because they have greater responsibility with them, because when they embody, because they are in today's language influencers, so automatically it spreads. Very naturally, because so many people are connected. So they have a greater responsibility. So Khatwang Rishi is one of those who fought from the side of the Devas in the Devasur Sangram, and the gods won. So he was a human being, a king, who embodied positivity and spread positivity all over the world. I mean, whatever that world was, in others. Hope and light and peace. So at the end, the Devas tell him, please come. You have heavens already. Please come and spend some time. Padharo. Hamare bhi desh mein. So, he says, okay, fine. But before you tell me how much time I have. Because this is not what I want actually. I don't mind spending a few days. But I want the ultimate possibility that human being can have. So, you tell me how much time I have. He says, the Devas tell him, basically, you know what? You have only one muhurt. He says, hell with heaven. Heaven can wait. He comes to earth, back. Because only on earth you can do this. And he concentrates himself fully on the feet of the Lord. And he says, this is how he meditated upon the Lord. And as he meditated upon the Lord, that one muhurt 12 minutes or 24 minutes was enough to free him from all the bonds and took him straight to the Lord. So Shukdev says, Parikshit, you have 7 days. Lot of time with you. And he says, you should draw your from the physical consciousness. See again, Pandava's ascension into the prana. From the prana, shed the desire self, shed the ego self, then draw it further with the help of Om, Pranav. He says, then take the breath into the buddhi, and then take the buddhi into the Lord. Shri Krishna describes this in the Gita as one of the ways of yoga. So that all your consciousness, why is saying this journey? Because if we don't do that, if we don't withdraw, you say, what's wrong? I'll just think about the Lord in the mind. All these fellows, if they are not purified, they will pull you back. That's what happens during meditation. So you have to absorb, take the whole process, withdraw the consciousness from its engagement. Mothers use the word, unroll the strings of consciousness. What are these strings? Attachments. And then take a plunge within. So you withdraw from the physical consciousness, from the breath, from the vital consciousness, and all the vayus are there. We talk about it when we come to the snake with the 5 heads. It'll come in one of the stories in the Bhagavat. And then you withdraw into the mind, the buddhi. The mind must think of the Lord. Then the mind itself has to withdraw itself in a pure contemplation of the divine. He says, one muhurt was enough for him. Oh, Parikshit, you have a whole week to yourself. This is the way. At one point of time, we who claim to be inheritors of Sanatana Dharma faced death. Not with frightful. Those who are frightened have died before they are dead. And that's what death wants, to be frightened. That's why in Savitri tells death, oh death, I have already conquered over thee within, because my heart is calm. I am not afraid of you. And who can do it? One who has found his psychic being, or one who is completely devoted to the Lord, lives for the Lord. He is freed from death. This is the first conquest. And all these people had realized this first conquest. There was no fear at all. So they faced death with unflinching eyes. Not like today. Oh, Corona. How many died? What happened? Oh my God. This happened. That happened. When you hear, you say, what has happened to the vanshaj of Parikshit and Janmejaya and Arjun? That's a different story, the effect of Kali Yuga. And we'll talk about it further. Jai Ma.